Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, the season one finale of Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. Here we go again. I'm Alex.
All hype. It feels like maybe we caused this podcast to happen when we first, there's a loop. And it all came back to one. Imagine that. What a fun idea. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about the final two episodes of season one of Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. They both dropped on Disney Plus. Episode 9, Hero or Menace, and episode 10, If This Be My Destiny. So if you haven't watched them, do go check them out because we're going to spoil them. Starting right now in the second to last episode, we got a showdown with Scorpion, with Lonnie getting some tombstone gas Lonnie! And getting powered up, teaming up with Spider-Man to take down Scorpion together. And then the last episode, we loop back to the beginning, as Justin mentioned, where it turns out what Norman has been doing with the intern program is building up a portal to space, which lets through a symbiote. Doctor Strange and Spider-Man try to stop it, but it ends up causing Spider-Man's origin. And then at the end, we get a wild amount of teases for season two, including something that I certainly didn't see coming at the end here that really changes a lot of what we thought Spider-Man and the mythos. So before we
there's a lot of things that could mean, Alex.
For sure. Lots to get into here, and we will get into prognostication for season two, which has already been picked up, so presumably it's going to happen at some point, I guess. But why don't we, before we even talk about these like final two episodes, let's talk about the season as the whole. What'd you think about this? And I feel like I'm going to, based on our brief conversation, we might get some opposite opinions here. But Justin, let's go to you first. What was your impression of season one of Your Friendly?
I liked it. I'm friendly to friendly. Friendly on friendly action. It's like going to Friendly's and getting a fantastic fudgy.
Don't bring
Friendly's
into this. Don't bring Carvel is fudgy, bro. Come on, bro.
Okay. What is it? What's the
Conehead Sunday?
You were thinking of like Cookie Opus, which is also Carvel.
Yeah. No, I was thinking of the Conehead. This was great, I thought. I liked the wild creative swings that it took. It sort of had a we can do whatever we want vibe to it, which is something that I don't think a lot of Marvel shows have. This did that in the season and then pushed it for the reveals going into season two. I feel like we talked about this as it feeling more What If than What If did. Mm-hmm. And then we get a literal image of the Watcher at the end of the last episode. I was like, guys, what are we doing here? And, you know, that's funny how hard they went on that. And that's what this is. I don't want to get too far into the logic of how the origin works, where it's a full on absolute time shattering logic problem. But sure. Let's do it. That's the kind of swings that they want to take, and I'm here for it.
And for the counterpoint, over to Pete LePage.
Hey, yeah, so a couple things. I feel like I agree with what the JT Sizz is putting out there. This is got a fun vibe to it, but we're making such huge changes that if I didn't have to watch season two, I wouldn't, because there's so many changes here. I'm like, well, this isn't for me. This is for somebody else who doesn't know Spider-Man and doesn't know things, because it's maddening to see that the choices that they're making, and it goes against some of the characters, I feel like. I was having an okay time with it, and some peaks and valleys for sure. But by the end of the second, I was like, well, what are we even doing?
It's a remix, bro. Get with it.
Remix. It is. It is. You can tell by the opening song credits that it's a remix. But I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like, I got what I asked for, but now that I got it, I was like, well, I don't like this. So I feel very hypocritical because it's like, oh, we've seen Spider-Man done so many different ways that it's like, all right, well, let's try something new. And they did something new. And I was like, whoa, why? I don't like this. This is new. So I feel bad for saying it, but it is how I feel. So, whatever.
But I think the point is this is a real post-streaming era show where they're like, hey, if you want to watch the Spider-Man that you know, there's so many episodes of that on this same service that you can just dial up and watch those. And I think they smartly were like, let's do something different that doesn't even touch a lot of the normal things. No Uncle Ben, no Gwen or Mary Jane. There's none of the standards here. And I think maybe that's what you're feeling, Pete, because it's even beyond a remix. It's like a reshuffling and a sort of push off of expectation into something new. Yeah. But I would guess, especially given the literal list of cameos they have at the end of this 10th episode as well, not only do they have cameos throughout this entire season, they just had a list of characters at one point, the future web candidates. They're going to trend back toward expectation, I think, and that will be exciting.
Well,
if
that feels like, well, if we're going to go off the deep end, let's go off the deep end. Don't try to then, as you're going, making big swings, don't then try to correct them.
Here's one thing that I'll mention. And just overall, I would say I'm very much on the positive. Really enjoyed this show. I think it built really nicely over the course of the season. I have some like little issues here and there. But for the most part, I had a really fun time. And in particular, I thought the 9th episode, building to that to me was like, that's all I needed for this season. Bring in Lonnie and Spider-Man together. Those were the two paths we followed.
I wanted Lonnie not to go evil. And
hold on. We'll talk more about the 9th episode. I only bring this up in terms of like, I thought it built really nicely to that. And then episode 10 was like, oh, there's a little extra thing in my mind. I mean, obviously it's important in terms of looping back to what happened in the first episode, but in terms of the emotional thread of the season, I thought they crested that really nicely. And I was very happy with that. And I found myself like, getting excited to turn on the episodes more and more as the season went. So I think overall that's a good sign. The thing that is holding me back a little bit is kind of what we're bouncing around here, or at least haven't brought up yet, is the whole MCU nature of it. And it keeps cropping up its head where even to the twist at the end, I'll just straight up say the thing at the end, which we leave on. You were asking Justin a lot about where is Aunt May going? She's constantly leaving. What is going on with her character? It turns out she's visiting Richard Parker in prison. This to me is something where it goes back to the nature of like, okay, we're still threading the line with technically this kind of takes place in a variant of the MCU where we never really talked about what happened to Peter Parker's parents in the MCU, in the Tom Holland version. Ben Parker, I believe they eventually came around with like, yes, he is dead. He's 100% dead. Because I was expecting they would come on Ben Parker in prison there. That's obviously not who we got. We got Richard Parker instead. And the way the season rolled out, Ben Parker would have made more sense. But since we are in MCU 2.0, they can't do that because he's already dead in the MCU. So that's the only thing is like that they have to keep looping back to that and mentioning the Sokovia Accords and like threading the line of like, I guess the Vulture is out there somewhere and maybe we're going to loop back to that or something. I hope in season two it branches out even farther and they don't feel so beholden to being like Spider-Man's doing his thing with Borman and they're like, wow, half the people got blipped. Anyway, moving on, you know?
Well, agree. And the Sokovia mentioning where we get Doc Ock going on a rant about it at the beginning, so I was like, why are we doing this? And I think you're right. They're just very aggressively being like, this is at a point in time. So remember that because they don't want to mess with the other stuff. So the MCU is sort of like the watcher sort of glaring at this TV show being like, careful now.
Weird that Spider-Man didn't clock that, though, because it seemed pretty obvious.
The watcher in the sky?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe
I don't know if everyone can just look up and see him. Yeah. He's just coy. He's watching. He's not.
I mean, I could.
I also, just to clarify about that, I don't think that was necessarily a what if thing so much as the same way the Watcher appeared in X-Men 97 is like, this is a crucial, important turning point for the universe. which is weird because it was kind of just a conversation with Dr.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you.
Because it happened, I was like, oh, shit, if he's here, that means something else. Oh, no? Well, that goes against the whole thing. I was like, "What is that just a plug? They're like, hey, if you think this is cool, there's also a show called Watcher." Yeah, I was like, what if? Are we just plugging shit?
No, it's what Alex is saying. Is like, this isn't, it's very much the comic book, the classic comic book version of The Watcher, where he's like, this is a momentous moment in time that he had to be there to witness.
Doctor Strange monologue? Him
Peter
just monologue?
In the chat, yeah. And I don't know what that, if they're trying to say this sets Peter on a track with his destiny, mm-hmm. or it's about Doctor Strange being like, I've been to, because they have this weird conversation about like, have you been to the future to see what happens? He's like, if I had, I can't tell you about it. And it's like, well, there's something there. So mm-hmm. I don't know what character, and maybe we'll see that next season, was important that the Watcher watched. Because I don't think Spider-Man changed a lot in that moment. But maybe Doctor Strange alluding to that is what the momentous occasion.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I took away the reason they threw him in there is this whole season has been building up to Spider-Man becoming Spider-Man, down to the costume, down to embracing his destiny. The name of the episode is If This Be My Destiny. So I think that was the implication there, rather than like, get ready for what's coming. This is a crucial moment. But I don't know. Could be wrong.
One other thing I wanted to say, just on a series thing, is speaking to Pete's concerns, like, I feel like Peter Parker and any Spider-Man story is usually mixed up with his romantic interests. And this show very much did not do that. The only romantic interest that was gestured to at the beginning and then a little bit at the end is Pearl. And she calls him Peter in the last episode. And he's like, ooh. So like, there is a little bit of that there, but it's such a non-factor in the show that I feel like this show has put the relationship between Peter and Lonnie as that. They put its energy into that, a friendship. And I thought that really worked and maybe speaks to just the different ways that generationally people look at relationships. I don't think the generation that this is maybe targeting, we argued about whether this is targeting us, like older fans, or like actual young people. But I think actual young people look at relationships differently than the classic Spider-Man canon does. So friendships are more important, I think, than mm-hmm. romantic relationships. And I thought that was an interesting choice that maybe speaks to that.
Well, and that also, I think, to the generational divide you're talking about, and obviously we're on the older spectrum, so we can't totally speak to it. But I think that ties into the relationship with Nico and the way that it played out here, too, which we talked about a lot, even though we don't think they're going this way with Nico. It seems like a lot of it was romance coded between Nico and mm-hmm. Peter, down to their conversation in the alleyway where he's upside down and it calls to mind the upside down kiss with Mary Jane and everything. But really, I think that was just about their friendship. And if anything was, again, a tiny little glimpse of romance, it was the scene in episode 9 where Pearl and Nico hang out, and Pearl's like, we should do this more often. And Nico's like, oh.
Yeah, I know. The close-up of Nico over Pearl's shoulder, I was like, okay, that is romance.
That is a fun twist on it, though. I laughed out loud, and I thought that was a really fun take on that. Instead of an upside-down kiss, you got an upside-down punch, which is mm-hmm. hilarious.
Mm. As they say in Carousel.
Two sides of the coin.
Never mind.
Okay. I like where you're going. Yeah. Arch Broadway reference to domestic
Sometimes
violence.
Sometimes a slap feels like a kiss. That really is held up over time, right? Carousel, I think. Uh-huh. Yes.
No notes. No problem. No one has notes. No one has notes.
Music's really good.
Joke about this.
Yeah. Well, is it good enough to put amount of production of that very problematic show? That show is problematic in like many ways.
Yes. Also, nobody likes clam bakes. That's another problem. Anyway, why don't we...
I love a good clam bake.
Everybody, I like to steam them.
Everybody loves a clam bake. And spring is busted out all over and all of those things. We all know the songs from Carousel. We don't need to repeat this or spend any more time.
I'm sure the listeners are singing along with
Let's take it to episode 9.
That's what I was going to do. I was going to kick it over to episode 9. This is the one that focuses, as I mentioned, on the big scorpion fight. Lonnie and the 1/10th are fighting with the scorpion gang while trying to steal Otto's inventions from the Oscorp truck. Lonnie ultimately gets gassed with, what is it, Diox 3, and gains invulnerability and super strength, so he's able to help Spider-Man stand side by side with Spider-Man, take down the Scorpion. Spider-Man almost loses it. We got a little tease for the last episode of Norman's Big Plan, which we'll talk about, obviously, I think, more when we get to episode 10. But yeah, the big thing here is Lonnie and Spider-Man's journey, the 1/10th and the Scorpion. I'll say, first of all, just the action was great in this episode.
Great perspective shifting in all of the Scorpion fight stuff. And that was a long fight. And they still made it visually interesting and dynamic the entire time. I also, this episode kicking off with just a Norman Doc Ock roast sesh, I thought was like fun and weird. Astronauts, great stuff.
It was a weird for me because Osborn has been doing such a good job of playing Peter and kind of, I think, making the choice to be like, okay, I'm going to be an evil mastermind, but you won't be able to tell because I'll never kind of give my hand away. And I was really surprised, even though he was holding a napkin over the phone, so his fingerprints were there, which is, I think, a smart move.
No, it was because the phone was dirty. He didn't want to touch a dirty prison phone.
I was like, there's no record of me
being
here.
I feel like they know he's there.
They know he's there.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're talking to each other.
Sure. But I'm just saying that, like, you know, if there's no physical interest. Anyways, I just felt like this is the first time we've seen Osborn, who he really is, when he's talking to Doc Ock here. And I was surprised because it kind of goes against everything we've seen thus far, where he's keeping his evil plans to himself, not boasting or being this kind of, like, horrible person that also is revealed more in the next episode. So I was really surprised to kind of see this move. I felt like it was almost a little less of an evil mastermind move, more of a petty, just kind of rich piece of shit.
Yeah, he's just being sort of an asshole. But pairing that with later in the episode, he's still being like the Uncle Ben figure to Spider-Man at the end of the episode. So they're definitely making Norman a more complicated character. The 10th episode slips back into your super villainy, your almost Lex Luthor way of talking about stuff. And I think that's setting up what we're going to get next season from him. But I like the way they're complicating it.
I think the the beginning of the episode to me was, beyond being a fun scene between these two actors who we haven't seen really interact, was expository. You know, it was getting out there that Norman is interested in space exploration, something that he has never mentioned before in the show, but is important setup. Also being like, here's what's going on with your tech and where it's going, because that's, again, the bulk of the episode. It also sets up, which was kind of unnecessary, but sets up Otto swearing revenge on Norman, which he had already done. So it just does that again more than anything. And also it clears up the big theory that Justin had that Iron Man wasn't actually Iron Man, but Norman.
You know, when they did the previously on and they showed that again, I was like, aha, I've got it. I nailed it. And then I was like, that cameo is just very odd. If it's not
it was just there to have Iron Man, and that was pretty much it. It's like the Watcher thing.
Necessary.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, this is another thing, like, not to make a big knock on the show, but I do think there's like a little looseness in the script sometimes where they throw things out there and they're kind of just there to be there. This is very much jumping ahead. But the fact that in the final episode, they're doing a project on how things rust and that doesn't play into the episode at all was surprising to me.
Well, guys, rust is a big problem, okay?
No, I know, but that seems to be like...
I don't know if it's a big problem.
It's a huge problem.
It's not something we don't see coming, I would say that.
It's one of the most obviously approaching things ever.
Stuff all over my metal! What is happening?
No, but I mean, it's usually like, it's a trope, but there's a reason when you're looking at a high school class and they're like, I'm teaching this very specific Shakespeare play. Oh, is that applicable to the situation you're in right now? All right, that's when they do that, rather than, here's a totally random thing that doesn't play into your emotional journey at all.
I think something we forget when we're theorizing about all of these MCU shows is we're like, okay, the pieces are falling into place. Like when you're writing a script and on a TV staff, it's like, okay, we have to get this done. Hurry. What's it going to be? It's rarely masterminded to the point where they can make every element count. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I like theorizing. I like being like, aha, it's a fake Iron Man, so that will then set up this thing. And they're like, no, it's just Iron Man. And the real thing is Doc Ock's in jail and Norman's just going to go roast him for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I 100% agree with that. Why don't we talk about the bulk of the episode, though? I felt like it was a natural progression they did with Big Donovan getting to the point where he's just running away from the gang. He's clearly talked a big game at the beginning. But Lonnie, using his incredible football powers, because I believe he was bit by a radioactive football, is able to dodge things, he's able tackle, and he's able to be a leader.
Football. That's exactly what football is. He's not doing anything extraordinary. He can stick and move people.
Football. You're as good at football as Lonnie Lincoln?
What? No.
Well, let's remember, though, he's so good that the team lost and all the football players cried at the beginning of the
Even the coach getting choked up on the PA. I want to talk about the Dom-Lonnie thing. I got so excited when Dom ran away because I was like, Lonnie, this is your chance. You no longer have to be in the gang. The leader left. He's got no power over you. This is your chance. And the fact that he, like, stayed.
Rose to power.
And then jumped into I was like, fuck, Lonnie, you had a window. It was so stressed.
You're really feeling it for Lonnie.
Well, it's a horrible origin story in the way that it's just like, here is a kid with a ton of potential. He has a ton of potential, a ton of opportunity, and he's blowing it. And
he said this in the show, but I think there's a key moment that happens in, I want to say it was the second episode, when he's talking to Peter on the corner and they're having a great time talking to each other. And Peter's like, well, see you later. And there's a moment, and then Lonnie goes,
yeah, I saw that. And just clocked that.
I know, Pete, we have listeners on the show. I'm not just talking to you, okay?
I know. I'm just letting you know I'm with you. Jesus.
Oh, okay. All right. Great. But my point is, like, he talks about in a later episode all the expectations and everything that's laying on top of him. So I've certainly been trying to wrap my brain around, like, yes, like you're saying, this kid with all this potential, going to be in the NFL, does great in school, has all these friends, has a great girlfriend. Why is he joining this gang? And I think it's just like, he could just let go. He could let the breath out. And even though there's these other very tense things, it's simpler. And that's it. And that's what he wants.
His skill set's a little more, like, he's smarter than everybody else. He's cooler than everybody else. He's able to, you know, he's slicker than all the other people.
He's nicer.
He can beat out Dozer in a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, in school, it's more challenging because there's just more going on. There's more stresses, his home life, all of that. They do a great job of setting that up, I think, in this show. So, like, when Donovan runs off, like, truly, his life is threatened for a second. He's like, I'm getting in my Subaru and getting out of here. Because I don't know if you guys noticed, shouts to the 110 sensible car choices. They're all driving Subaru grocery getters. And I was like, what? When they're smashing into the Oscorp van, I was like, where did they get these cars? These are not fast cars.
No, they're not fast cars.
But they fit a lot and can carry a lot of groceries, which is important. Yeah.
For sure. Or stolen tech, I guess. I guess I just don't understand how gangs work, or at least how this gang works. Like, there seems to be 10 of them, and they're just like, time to go hog wild on the streets and run all of these trucks off the road. Here we go.
But this brings up a good point, because what nobody's talking about is when a gang goes to a place to buy a car, they're pushing Subarus like you can't believe. And these poor gangs have no choice but to kind of succumb to such a great deal that the Subaru is available. Because if you buy them in bulk, like gangs need to do, you know, that's where all the savings is.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about three? The bulk of three.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, you're right, Pete, because it's a shame that we're letting these car salesmen take advantage of an innocent gang trying to get a good crime car or trio of crime cars to get out there and do crimes.
I was just going to say, who are the real criminals, the criminals or the car salesmen that take advantage of the criminals?
That's right.
I think
that's a great point. I think we can answer that. To your point, Alex, the gang is just, it flexes to like 10 people who are like, they're dressed in like Gap shirts and they're all just on the street. And when that, I thought they were just bystanders when they're first breaking in the truck. And then it's like the Scorpions show up and they're like, let's get them. I was like, there's like a mom who's in there. Like, are you in the 110?
She just saw a street fight happening. She's like, oh, let's go. I need a break. Yeah, I need to let loose.
I'm having a day. Yep.
Maybe they got our notes about the gentrification of 110th Street, that it's not a crime-ridden place. And they're just like, yeah, let's have a sort of medium wealthy mom up there just like, I'm 110, bitch. Let's
That's
ride.
The nice thing about New York City is, you know, anytime someone wants to start some shit, you can just yell to some strangers, let's ride. And they're like, yeah, come on.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Everyone's ready for a fight.
I really like where they went with Lonnie in this episode, because yeah. You would expect he gets hit with this gas, becomes super strong, becomes invulnerable, and he goes crazy because of it, and that's how he turns evil, but he's not. He's helping out Spider-Man, he's defending the gang, he's defending the city. Loved seeing the two of them working together, and even
though
so
cool.
He sticks with the gang at the end, which is a real bummer.
Yep.
It went in surprising directions, and I really liked how they played that out.
But one step further, Alex, like, Lonnie is who stops Peter from killing Gargan. Mm-hmm. Lonnie breaks the Norman yes. sort of echoes in his head and says, like, hey, man, he's good. Stop. And I thought that was so smart, so unexpected, and really shows that their friendship is the core of this. And while they are rising in hero and villainy, like, that still doesn't mean you're not able to remain helpful to each other, I guess.
Yeah, what I like about it is it gives us hope for Tombstone to kind of maybe not be as horrible as...
Well, I do think... I mean, they've gone through a ton of different iterations, but Tombstone is a complicated character in the comics. Like, sometimes he's played as straight evil gangster and that's it, but even in the most recent run of Amazing Spider-Man, they have a very complicated relationship together where sometimes... Yeah. He's like, no, Lonnie, come on, calm down. And I think that's what they're playing off of here. Like, yeah, we're going to see him rise. We're going to see him build up a gang. Obviously, like, if this is MCU adjacent, Wilson Fisk exists there somewhere. So that's probably going to play into it. There's probably some other crime bosses and things like that. But I think there is still going to be this relationship between the two of them. And I like that. I like that we have grown to feel and care about Lonnie in maybe even more of a way than we have Peter Parker over the course of the show.
Yeah, I agree.
I love the way they're showing Lonnie as far as, like, the connection that they have. Also, it was heartbreaking when he threw out the jacket, though. That just broke my heart. But I want to talk about, like, some...
Hold on that real quick. I think, you know, you're talking about where he gets his football powers from. Mm-hmm. Iron Man has a suit that makes him powerful. Mm-hmm. Maybe that jacket was where he was getting
sure.
his...
Could be. One of the things I want to talk about is the kind of like tense hero reveal moments where like shit's going down and then we get this like we get Nico almost trapped. But then all of a sudden Spider-Man appears almost out of her necklace, if I can say that.
She goes necklace up first.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we kind of have this Spider-Man losing and just punching Scorpion in the head in front of everybody, and then the reveal that Lonnie was there. And they also, during the Scorpion fight, you think maybe Lonnie got stabbed through, and they did the kind of dramatic reveal that he's unbreakable. So some real cool kind of like reveal moments that they had in this little rule of three that I thought worked really well for the show.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Let's just keep moving along. Let's talk about the end of the episode here. I did want to discuss the conversation that Norman has with Spider-Man. Justin, you had talked about a little bit like how complicated they are making Norman and sort of fleshing him out as a real human being. But is he gaslighting Peter here? Because it really is. His voice drove Spider-Man to be like, I got to push harder. I got to kill Scorpion. But then at the end, he's like, no, you will always do the right thing. You got to listen to yourself. But at the same time, that's not what Norman told him earlier.
He also hinted about his evil plan of like, man, I wish I had a million of you or whatever, hundreds of you so we could, you know, and I was like, ooh, Peter, please read mm-hmm. into that a little bit. He's not picking up on anything. He has a real blind spot for him, and he kind of talks about all the nice things that he's done for him. So it makes sense. But it's starting to drive me insane that he's not kind of picking up on the smaller cues here.
Well, but I don't think it's that bad. The advice he gives him is like, hey, with great power comes respect. And, like, that's not bad. That's, he's trying to tell Peter, someone who has power but is not using it and not doesn't have confidence in what he's doing. He tells him that to get him that confidence that he needs, and he takes it the wrong way, like a lot of kids maybe would do, and it's Lonnie that stops him to protect him. So I don't think he's gaslighting him at all. I think it really is his good advice that he's giving him. So I think Norman is sort of has a good core despite his thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. One other thing that I'll mention towards the end of the episode is we get to see they have the spider. They've taken Peter's blood, as we suspected when Peter was beaten up in the previous episode.
Yeah.
That's a lot of blood that they are injecting in that spider at the end there. I don't think a spider could hold that much human blood.
Oh, yeah, they can.
They can blow up like a balloon.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. It's like a tick type of situation.
Yeah, but flies are full of blood. They're just goosed with blood.
They're like the gushers of the insect kingdom.
Yeah, you ever catch one with chopsticks and just accidentally eat it? Mm. Throw it right in your mouth?
Yeah, like they did in Karate Kid.
Anytime
Mr. Miyagi is in the background in Karate Kid, the original movie, not the remake, he's eating flies. Legend. He's chomping down on
them. I'm not going to stand for Miyagi shit talking. All right,
his name is Pat Moore Eat-a. That's what it is. He loves to eat more flies.
Wow, Alex, strong game right there. I mean, why would he catch him with chopsticks if he wasn't going to eat him?
Exactly.
Use a fly swatter.
Justin, I just want to kind of talk to you. You're defending Osborne a little bit, but he's literally taking kids' ideas away from them and kind of like, you know, turning them to his own evil plan. So
in the 10th
episode,
great
he is.
I'm talking about 9th episode stuff where I think he is complicated. I agree in the 10th episode, he becomes a bit Lex Luthery, but at the same time, he is saying he is a little bit mad with like, it's all coming together. But he is trying to explore space. He's being reckless, and they are his interns. It's not like he's stealing that from them. They're mad and surprised, but I'm sure he's within his legal bounds of doing that. So
what do you mean you're sure? You can't legally have an intern and then like take their ideas and use it to open a fucking gateway.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you know how anything works? The people who created Spider-Man and all these characters don't own them. They are owned by Marvel, and they did not.
And have you ever had an internship? Because usually at an internship, you're not like, I created these things, now they're mine. I'm going to walk out with this proprietary
information. I'm just saying there's a difference between saying like, here, we want you to work here and learn skills versus here, do this thing that I'm not going to tell you what it's for. And then, oh, big reveal.
Yeah.
We're doing something fucking crazy.
Well, and hold on. Let's jump into the 10th episode since we've done that.
One more thing on 9 before we move off of it. The alleys, are there any cities that have alleys? I put this question out there for everyone. There's no alleys in New York. There's like two in the West Village.
You just lied. There are a couple.
Do you think that, wow. Well, what do you know? You never even fucking been
to
this
city. Yourself, bro. There are a lot of alleys in New York. Especially down by like Canal Street and Chinatown and that kind of stuff.
There's literally like two. Justin is right about this.
The alleyfication of New York and any city. And I'm just curious. Watching this, I was like, because there's a lot of alley hangs in this episode, and I'm like, in the 10th episode, is Daredevil meeting Finesse in the same alley that Nico and Spidey are having their hang?
Yeah. Like, is he tripping in Finesse? Make no sense.
Yeah. Wow. Anyone out there, please tell me if any city, a city you live in or visited, has a series of alleys, because I'm dying to know where this crazy
Philadelphia
thing has
alleys. There's a lot of
alleys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pete should know. He likes to dress up as a cat and hang out with his cat friends in alleys. So he knows where they all are. Right, Pete?
Well, yeah. I mean, with Philly, they have kind of like, you know, your kind of main streets, and then around back where the garbage and all that kind of stuff, they have like back alleys too, things, so smaller streets that
But that's more residential.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I'm talking skyscrapers.
Which back alley, in your opinion, I know there's a big debate on this, but which back alley has the best cheesesteaks, Pete?
Oh, man, always the shadiest ones, man. The shadiest bodegas that have the best cheesesteaks. That's what Philly's all about.
I love buying sliced meats and cheese whiz from a stranger in a back alley.
Yeah, man. It's where you get the best stuff.
Yeah. Can I get that wit heroin, please? All right. Let's talk about the final episode. We've already talked about a bunch of this, but Norman reveals that the interns were separately working on pieces to create the space portal, a la Thor's hammer, Mjolnir, and the Chitauri coming to New York at the Battle of New York. He wants to create his own thing. Doctor Strange comes to stop him. And of course, Doctor Strange is right, because the symbiote that we saw in the first episode comes out of there. And thanks to some messing with the time stone while Doctor Strange and Spider-Man fight him, they end up falling in a portal to Midtown High, causing Spider-Man to get his powers. All of it time loops back together. Ultimately, they do seal the portal, but a little bit of the symbiote is left behind. We'll talk about, again, a bunch of scenes at the end, but that's the bulk of the episode, and it kind of the bulk of the emotional end of the episode is really Spider-Man and Strange talking as the Watcher watches on, and Spider-Man really becoming the hero, or on his way to becoming the hero that we know he can be. This episode was just less for me, just because of all the plot machinations, because we lost the Lottie of it all. Still fun stuff in here and fun fights, but like, I don't know, there was too much going on, I felt.
Well, this episode had big season two premiere energy, like especially coming out of the gate. And obviously it did wrap up a lot of the season one stuff, but it felt like a full reset on the storyline, the major storylines, or at least the character-driven ones. And especially when the last episode felt like such a season finale. Mm-hmm. So like it was an interesting idea. It was very like Game of Thrones style storytelling here, where the ninth episode ties it all up and the 10th episode sort of post-mortem and pushes us off into the future. I thought this one, though, like, as I'm realizing that it was like a time loop situation, I was like, oh, that's cool. I actually like that. And this had some of the better dialogue, I thought, from the whole season, with Doctor Strange being like, actually from Greenwich Village, not Midtown, which is the most like New Yorker answer possible.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange in this show is just really good. He's a great version of him. Feels very like out of the classic 70s comic Doctor Strange. Which I'm really enjoying here.
I'll put a lot of that down to the design of the gloves, which I wish they would do in live action. Like, I love those Kirby Crackle gloves going down. Yes. Very fun.
Then we get, this is in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, fun.
Peter, maybe we should listen to the Magic Doctor. I was like, oh, this dialogue's really working for me. And that was a big complaint of mine early on, how, like, sort of wrong the dialogue felt. And the jokes just didn't land, felt very clammy and old.
One of the, speaking of things that like I might have talked about negatively, there was one thing where like Venom got thrown back into his world there, and it looked for a second like he was being thrown into a comic. And I was like, oh, there's a moment where I don't hate the animation, and it's a really kind of cool frame or two. So that made me be very happy.
To be clear, it's not Venom, it's symbiotic alien. All right.
Yeah.
So when you refer to the character, please say.
You can call it what you want to call it. I'm going to call him fucking Venom, man.
Sure. But that's not who it is. Venom's a different. We're about to meet Venom in season two.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. Still, the fight scenes were very good. I did, like Pete saying, the seeing through the portal, just all the symbiote heads stuck in there, I thought was a really neat visual.
That was fun. Like the flowers, the fireball shooting flowers from Mario.
Mario,
100%. I don't know. There wasn't much of an emotional thing going on here. I wish we had had more of, not necessarily a resolution, but more of sort of a point on the Norman-Peter relationship, because that's felt like we could have gotten here. Instead, we got Doctor Strange and Spider-Man, which is okay, but that kind of goes back to like, yeah, they know each other from the MCU, so they know each other here. I don't know. I didn't get as much out of an emotional high from this episode as I did from the last one.
Yeah, definitely not.
I agree, but I do like the kind of symmetry of it starting with Strange and then ending with Strange. I thought that was really kind of cool. And all the questions we had kind of got tied up by this last episode. So I did appreciate that kind of work.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, Justin.
I was going to say, and in general, I think it was just a lighter episode. It was like all the science classic, you know, comic book fight set up and fight here, and really well done. and then just a run of setups for the next season and sort of reveals and setups. And, you know, that's fun. It's just not as much of a meal, like you're saying, Alex.
I just wish after Peter or after Osborne clearly was like going after Strange and being like, you know, fuck you, you came in here and you're doing horrible things, when it was like, I was kind of like, way Peter was like, I was like, dude, you got to break off from this guy. It's clearly he is doing horrible things. And the fact that you're attached to him is really.
Well, and he does by the end of the episode. Like, that is the resolution there, as he gives up the internship and Harry, with Nico's encouragement, starts his own company, which presumably Peter's going to join, which I like that move a lot. I thought that was fun. Yeah. I did want to call out, just before I forgot, I thought there was a really nice payoff to the Emma, Pearl's friend, bit, where she's always on her phone, where she's the one who is actually most prepared.
Oh, that was hysterical.
Yeah, the punchline, there's somebody off camera who's like, that was surprisingly informative, which made me laugh. Yeah. So, good
it's
stuff.
Fun.
Why don't we talk about the stuff at the end, though? Because, like I said, there's a lot of different things to go down. We could start off with Harry's company, which is Webb. You said, we get a whole chalkboard of names. The one that I clocked, I didn't look up everybody. We got Ned Leeds, who is maybe the Hobgoblin someday, but also we know that is Tom Holland, Spider-Man's best friend, if things had turned out that way. We also got Max Dillon, a.k.a. Electro, on there. Was there any others you saw, Justin? Or
I didn't clock. I should have done a screen grab and really done the deep dive on him. But just to me, I just thought it was funny. We were making fun of how everyone was someone in this show, to the point where the logical heightening of that is like, just put a list of names of characters that they will eventually become on this at the end. Fun.
We also get Norman goes back to the wreckage of the lab and finds the bit of symbiote there. What do you think is going to happen there? Are we going to get Norman as Venom? Is he going to be studying it?
Hell yes. Yeah. He's going to be Venom. I think.
But on a glider? Venom with a glider? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, Why? They made a point of being like, hey, remember the glider in this episode? So I was like,
what if his name's Green Globlin? And he's a goopy.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Green Globlin? He's a glob.
Could happen.
It could happen, guys. Let's make Anything. Predictions.
Dreams. I could see him as Venom or experimenting on somebody else, like finding an Eddie Brock or something like that to, you know, volunteer to try it out on. Because I do think we're still going to get him as Goblin. It is just a slower walk there than certainly I expected. Yeah. But that's fun. I'm good with that. We also get Amadeus is working for Oscorp.
That really made me mad. I was like, somebody get Greg Pak on the phone. They're misusing his property.
No.
This is completely against who Amadeus Cho is. He would never do this. I'm furious about it.
No, totally makes sense with everything that's happened before in the series.
Nope.
He is much more of the brawn version of Amadeus Cho than the original version of Amadeus Cho, who was just a smart kid who was palling around with Hulk and then
it just seems
Hercules.
Insane to me that someone create such a great character and then someone else can grab him and be like, yeah, well, fuck all that you created. We're going to change him up.
I'll just refer you back to our conversation about interns and how those work earlier and move on to another point. This is a big one that I've seen people responding online, which I was surprised about, but we get the reveal that Jean Foucault is, in fact, Finesse, and she's working with or for Daredevil. She was the person who broke into the office to find information on Norman Osborn, as we suspected. And in case you don't know, Jean Foucault is a character known as Finesse, also in the comics. She was introduced in Avengers Academy, and she has very similar powers to Taskmaster in terms of being able to mimic the moves that other people have, because she may or may not be the daughter of Taskmaster. I don't think it's still been established in the comics whether she is or not. It's just been heavily hinted at. But that's fun. I think that's a fun pairing.
I like it. Yeah. I like that they sort of justified that whole the inclusion of Daredevil in all of this.
And fun sarcasm joke. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's good stuff. We also get Lonnie is turning albino because of the gas. It's starting to affect his fingers. I assume we're going to get more like pure, you know, milky white Tombstone in season 2, potentially.
It's amazing how much he's not paying attention to the fact that his skin is like flaking off.
Yeah, that would really kind of.
I would notice that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just from a paying attention point of view.
Yeah. A big one we talked about over the course of the season and didn't get as in as big of a way, I think, as we suspected. But Nico, in fact, does know magic.
And she's a sorceress.
Summons her mom out of her necklace, picking up on the thing from, I believe it was the previous episode, where she was like, no more secrets. She's obviously got one big secret, which is she knows magic.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I guess she has powers to, you know, control the dead or something. I don't know. I feel like Marvel Zombies ad that plays during the animation flip every time.
It'll
tie in.
An ad. Are we going to get, I don't think, the idea that it's just her mom in the necklace who can just pop up and be like, hey, be nice to Peter. He seems cool. Like, I want her to have the Staff of One. I want that to be the power set.
Yeah, and her being generic magic person in this show is not as interesting to me as Nico Minoru for the comics, who she needs to activate her staff with blood and can only use spells one time. That doesn't seem what we're getting here right now. I'm curious if they're headed there at all or if she is just magic person. It also means we're probably going to get much more magic and probably Doctor Strange back again in season two, which makes a lot of sense.
And he feels important to the show at this point.
Yeah.
Also, there was a fun Doctor Strange run in the comics where he had kind of like an understudy that kind of reminds me of Nico a little bit.
I guess we could see that. We get the tease that we all knew was coming, which is Doc Ock designs his octopus arms.
Yeah, finally put that together.
Very surprised we didn't get that in the season. Very surprised we got Scorpion as the big tech bad guy and not an actual Dr. Octopus reveal.
Yeah, it was. And also it's like when that reveal sort of like, yeah, I know.
yeah.
I was like, surely we can go a little further than this. And it also was very like in a run of like wild, strange reveals, we get like a very normy reveal.
Mm-hmm.
So,
But let's talk about the big one at the end. We touched on it before, but May goes to visit somebody in prison, and it turns out to be Richard Parker asking after his son. I won't mention it is voiced by Josh Keaton, who famously played Spider-Man in Spectacular Spider-Man, the animated series, has played Norman Osborn on the subsequent Spider-Man animated series. He played Harry Osborn.
Is he related to Michael Keaton?
I don't know. I didn't look up that part. I only looked up Spider-Man voice roles. But he's played Spider-Man a bunch in other video games as well. He also was whatever they called the Spider-Man character in last season of Invincible as a shout-out there. So it's nice to see a little bit of Spider-Man voice royalty showing up here. But what do we think about the reveal that Richard Parker is alive and in prison?
Weird. I was like, I don't remember Peter's Spider-Man's dad being named Dick, but I guess that's true. And that was a weird.
That is.
Yeah, Richard and Mary Parker, right?
Yeah. Dick Parker, as he's known.
Dick Parker and Marmar.
Yeah. Park that dick right over here, they would say to him. Park that dick right in jail, they would say.
Yeah, and that was the part that made me feel weird, is he didn't say his classic line, park that dick right over here.
Well, I mean, Aunt May knows it, so it's not like
she knows it. She doesn't need to say it out loud. But that was the implication of the scene. You gave a big sigh, Justin. How are you feeling about this?
Well, it's a big thing to put out there, and is he a villain? Is he a hero? Is he Uncle Ben here? Like, I feel like we don't need the Uncle Ben situation. Now we've moved past that as an idea. So I'm curious what they're going to do. It's a big bite out of the apple to take. And so it's a lot to leave hanging over the next season.
Yeah. I mean, the last two kind of bits at the end of the episode really bothered me, where I was like, what are we doing here with Dick Parker? And then the line later where instead of saying I'm Batman, he says I'm Spider-Man like he's Batman. And I was just like, what is this show? I don't even understand.
What are you talking about?
He was like, I'm Spider-Man in a way that, you know, the joke is he goes, I'm Batman. So I was just like, this is just crazy.
I'm still not quite sure what you're referring to. You've just repeated the same thing twice, but let's talk about the Richard Parker thing. I was mostly surprised about this, to contradict what I said earlier, is they spent the entire season bouncing around Uncle Ben and being like, well, now that he's not here anymore, now that he's gone, here's a picture of him so you know what he's looked like. So to have the reveal at the end be that Richard Parker is alive and not Ben Parker was weird to me just based on the way the season rolled out. And I was fully expecting a Uncle Ben reveal at the end there to throw out a wild theory, just again, because they've been bouncing around it a lot, though maybe just the implication is, as you know, for the MCU, he is dead, is that Richard and Ben did something criminal and Richard got caught and Ben is on the run. So we might still see Ben come back at some point, but that to me would explain all the real estate that's been taken up in the season, not saying Ben is dead, but Ben is not here anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know we're chasing. It's like chasing a rabbit. Like, mm-hmm. We have so much fun stuff. There's so much on the table. For that to take up the season feels like we're going in the wrong direction to me.
Yeah, I was initially, like, I'm expressing very thrown by it, and I'm not quite sure what we're doing with it. Obviously, we'd find out most likely in season two and how that affects and changes Peter. But I don't inherently have a problem with it because, like we talked about before, this feels very based in the whole soap opera nature of Spider-Man, to the point that, like, Richard and Mary returned at one point. Granted, they turned out to be robots in the comics. I don't think we're going to get that here. But having, like, surprising, shocking returns, having his dad still around, I do wonder, does Peter know about his dad being in jail? Does he know that he's alive? What happened to his mom? It raises all of those, like, very salient emotional threads that you could play out with Peter in interesting ways. So it raises a lot of questions, but it also puts a lot of possibilities on the table that I think could be very dramatic and interesting to follow in a season two.
Yeah. And like, they don't have to follow all of them. They can just put them up and see what happens, which I think the show did a good job of with this season.
Yeah. All right. And I think that brings us to a close here. But why don't we turn to our...
Real quick, I did look up some of the names on the board and did the quick Marvel deep dive into them. We've got... We've got Kaiden Nixon, who is a mutant named Wannabe, I believe, who has time powers. Wild.
Ooh, time powers.
Diane Jenkins, future Spider-Woman. We have Ripley Ryan, the character Star, someone who is currently featured in the comics in Infinity Watch, a character who's like very much half villain, half hero that I think is cool. We've got Tiberius Stone, who I think is the founder of Alchemex and is mostly featured in Spider-Man 2099, the comic. There's a couple people who I think are animators. Benjamin Anders, I think, and Tony Sandoval feel just like people. And there's one more named Adam Rodney that I couldn't find. But there's the main, and a lot of the other characters we already mentioned.
Nice.
So, interesting split. One, a mutant, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, I wonder if we'll see any of that. And to that end, why don't we turn to our vision board? I know we already talked about season two a little bit, but presumably season two is coming at some point. They already approved it, but we don't know exactly where they are in production. So hopefully it will be a year out. But if they haven't started it yet, it's definitely going to be 2 years out. So maybe a little while. But what do you guys think? What's on your vision board for season two of your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man? What do you want to see?
I'd like to see Dick go away, and I'd like to see MJ show up at some point.
Dick go bye-bye.
And I would like to Nico to team up with Doctor Strange, and they become a fun magic duo that Peter Parker can like jump over and hang with them and go on adventures and stuff.
Well, I do think we're going to get something with Nico. She was real mad at him for keeping a secret, and she continues.
Oh yeah, the turn on that's going to be fun.
And I feel like she's going to end up revealing, like she almost does to save her life in this episode, in episode 9, but instead Peter's there. So I think we'll get that. I think we're going to get Green Goblin. We're going to get Norman as Venom, which will be a fun – I think he's going to be the villain of the season, I would guess, in the way that a more personal version of Scorpion ended up being sort of the primary threat here. Are we going to get towards Sinister Six, the new version of that? Probably by the end of next season, I think.
The two big things that I really want to see in season two, I didn't really mention this with these last two episodes, but I thought we started to get towards some actual interior emotional life with Peter Parker towards the end of the season here, which he was the most even for most of the season while everybody else was getting to do dramatic stuff and go over arcs. So I want to see more of that. I want to see us actually explore Peter, the central aspect of this show, which I do think Richard Parker is going to play on that pretty heavily. So that's exciting. And then the other thing is, like, we've incessantly beaten this drum, I just want to see them get farther from the MCU. I don't need those references there. I'm sure they will throw those in. But again, I don't need to be like, here's what happened during Spider-Man Homecoming, and here's what's going on with Shang-Chi over here, and oop, Thanos is coming, by the way. We've jumped. None of that. None of that. Just move
I
ahead.
Hope they don't.
Shang-Chi would be great to get a cameo. That would be awesome.
For sure. But just get away from the MCU, forge your own thing, because all of that stuff is much more fun.
And let's not forget, we have the spider loose, as Pete was often saying.
Oh, yeah.
The spider ran off. It's still out there.
And that spider is full of blood, like chock full of blood.
Just chock full, and a lot of Peter DNA, because he already had a bunch in him. He got a little bit more when that nibble.
Also, be interesting if they do, like, Amadeus Cho Hulk.
Could be. Could go there. Gamma has been established. Do you think the spider that time travels is going to go find his past self, his past spider self?
Oh, wow.
So wait a second. Hold on. Peter Parker got a bite of his own blood, and that's what gave him spider powers?
Norman said he was treating the spiders with Peter Parker's blood to make more Spider-Man, and that's what bites him.
Then he's just getting his own blood. Like, if I put my own blood into me, I'm not going to suddenly get tiger powers.
Well, but it's
if a tiger
after...
bit you with blood.
Okay. If I put my blood inside of a tiger, and the tiger bit me, then I would
but
get
here,
tiger powers.
Here's what I'm saying: that has
it's
been
got
irradiated.
Time travel to go.
Oh, right.
I agree with that. That's what I was trying to say at the top. Like, the origin is sort of fucked up and doesn't make sense. So,
like, it would have made more sense if they irradiated the spider at any point in Norman's lab. Maybe it did going through the portal. I don't know.
No. I'm sure there was some. I think whatever Norman was doing was replicating the spider bite that got Spider-Man, using Peter's blood as the, like, this has been irradiated to have these spider powers. So he was trying to match what he was successful in creating the conditions that could make a Spider-Man. And that's what happened. He was shown how to do it through the time traveling.
I mean, I think the big takeaway here, and I'm going to add this to my vision board, is between season one and season two, I'm going to take my own blood, inject it into a bunch of animals, and then let them bite me, and we'll just see what happens. We'll see what
happens. Hey, Mike, good luck with that.
Thanks so much.
That's really good. Maybe I'll catch you a fly in my chopsticks. You could be fly guy.
Hey, if I can more eat it, I will. And
real quick, I guess if I were to sum up the vision board for the next season, I think daddy issues is what the next season is going to be all about. Between Norman coming to kill him and his dad making his appearance, that's what we're going to be getting.
And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub for ad-free versions of this podcast and many more. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and other things. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Yeah.
And stay spider blood.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.